What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Our Lives in Medicine. This episode features Paige Mills, aka the Biker Biddy. Paige is an emergency department nurse in Australia. She's also a power lifter, triathlete, strength and nutrition coach, and just an all-around badass lady. You can catch her riding her Harley, riding her inline skates, or saving lives in the hospital. Check out this episode where we discuss balancing fitness with healthcare, life in Australia versus in America, and her journey through both fitness and nursing. I hope you enjoy. And if you do, please feel free to share with others. Drop a like and a comment on iTunes. You have no idea how much it helps and how much we appreciate it. And as always, if you need some good beats to study or get some work done or just catch some good vibes, make sure you tune into the intro and outro for the lo-fi beats and check the show notes for the artist shoutouts. Thank you so much again for being a part of Our Lives in Medicine. I hope you enjoy. Live with Paige Mills, aka Biker Biddy. Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's it.
Where did that come from?
I'm sorry, it's not a very deep and meaningful story, but basically when I started Instagram, I'd just gotten my first Harley and I was just crazy about it. And I was just following other bike pages and stuff. So I was like, oh, I want bike or something in there. And my friend was using the word biddy at the time to describe annoying young girls, like in nightclubs, like basically the drunk annoying girl. It's like, oh my God, I love your t-shirt. And I was like, that's me. I'm the annoying girl in the club. So I made my Instagram name Biker Biddy. But apparently in Britain, it's used pretty often and it means like an annoying old woman.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm going to bring back the screen names.
I like it. Yeah. Biker Biddy's pretty cool. I like it. Like over here, it's kind of like, I don't know. Like for example, my mom uses it. Like when someone cuts her off, she'd be like, that biddy just cut me off. Like,
yeah, right. It's not a positive connotation really, but I love joking humor. So
yeah, exactly. I respect that. Nothing wrong with that. So, well, thank you for being a guest all the way from Australia. I really appreciate that. I know the time difference kind of worked out perfectly, though, so that's awesome.
Yeah, if you call 9 a.m. perfect. Not a morning person.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I could have waited. Yeah, I could have stayed up till later, but I appreciate it, though. Yeah, I'm not really a morning person either. It's just like I've been forced into it lately.
That's right, yeah.
I hate it. I'd rather stay up till 5 a.m. than wake up at 5 a.m.
Yeah, I was up till 4 last night.
Oh, my God.
Not doing anything productive. It's just a coronavirus thing. It's because, like, I was in isolation for so long with no commitments, like, nowhere to be. So, yeah, I just had no self-control to go to bed early, I guess, and now I'm stuck in the pattern.
Yeah, it was fun, honestly. I enjoyed my quarantine lifestyle, just kind of, like, sleeping when I wanted. You know, I'd sleep, like, 9 hours at night, and then I'd wake up, like, work out, eat, and then take another, like, hour nap. That was just awesome.
Yeah.
Like,
I think it's great.
Yeah, that was the move, man. I mean, if we could get that without, like, the whole world shutting down once a couple times a year, that'd be pretty sweet.
Well, I reckon we'll meet somewhere in the middle because I feel like I had a doctor appointment over the phone the other day and I thought about it and I'm like, I'm a fit, healthy person. In my whole life, I reckon 5% of the times I've been to the doctor, I've really required examination. And the rest of the time, I'm like, hey, I know that I probably have gastro. I need a medical certificate. Or, hey, I know I have a UTI. Give me ABs. And I don't really need to be in there.
Yeah, you kind of diagnose yourself. Plus, you know what you're doing as a nurse, so, you know.
Yeah, maybe that helps.
That does. I think you might be an exception to the average person. Now, I don't know what I don't know what the kind of common medical literacy is over in Australia, but I know over here, most people don't know hardly anything about healthcare as outside of healthcare, so.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah.
It's like a different language.
It is, yeah. And I think too that Googling, when you Google and you don't have a medical background, I think you take home the key points, and the key points are usually the worst case scenario.
The key points are usually like, you are dead or you will die tomorrow. It's like, that's not good. Yeah. So pretty, it's like, much. you have a cough. Well, it's either coronavirus or death. So
yeah, actually, you've just made me realize, I got sciatica for the first time in my life at the moment, and I Googled like potential causes, and I was really hesitant to say to my osteo and my chiro. I was kind of like, hey, don't laugh at me. I know you'll cringe, but I went on Google and I've self-diagnosed this, and they were like, no, you're spot on. Like you've taken away like a good understanding of it. But I think that's because I understand medical lingo. Do you know what I mean? Like maybe I can Google things and it's not such a bad idea.
Yeah, you don't jump to worst case scenario in your head. Yeah,
that's right.
I remember I was like in maybe college or high school when I was shadowing, and this doctor said that one of the worst things that ever happened to him was the phrase in a commercial, ask your doctor about this medication. He said it's like the most annoying thing that's ever happened to him in medicine.
Yeah, I can imagine actually, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, so that's gotta be frustrating. I actually had a guy. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're right. You go.
No, I was gonna say I had a guy today actually yell at me, like blow up, like explode in clinic because I wouldn't prescribe him narcotics. I'm like, well, I mean, you don't fit the. You said you're controlled with Tylenol, and all of a sudden he wants narcotics. I'm like, you'll be fine with Tylenol. Like, just use that.
Yeah. So, you can't have the contraceptive pill either. Just because you've seen it on TV doesn't mean it's good for you.
Oh my God. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, but yeah, what were you going to say? I'm sorry.
I forgot now.
See, that's why I told you
to go. Just like, I think it's wild that there's even ads for drugs, really. Like they're kind of like selling a lifestyle in a TV advert that's for drugs. That's crazy to me.
No, that's kind of true. They're like, hey, take this and you'll be better. Like, you'll be happy like the people in the commercial.
Yeah, right? But, like, why are we selling, why are we pitching the drugs to the consumer?
Yeah,
if you want to sell more of your drugs, it should be pitched to the doctor, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, people come to the... I love when the reps come and try to sell us stuff because they always bring food and, like, you know, gifts and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, they can't bring, like, gifts, but they'll just be like, here's a t-shirt and here's, like, free stuff. I'm like, yes, I'm, you know,
yeah.
I'll take that, so...
Yeah, how excited do you get about a free pen?
Pretty unreasonably excited, actually. But, yeah. You know, I appreciate the word free, so I take that.
That's right.
I know here, like, tobacco companies aren't allowed to advertise, like, on TV. Is that the same in Australia?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And we have you seen our tobacco packaging?
No.
Oh man, it's like, say on every single packet, they're not allowed to have any branding at all. They're not allowed to have a logo. I don't think that the name of the company or the brand is printed in the same font on every packet. And there's a giant image that's very confronting and it says in capital letters, it might be like an image of like completely dead lungs and it'll say like smoking causes lung cancer, or it'll be someone's teeth that are just like completely rotted out. It'll say smoking causes mouth cancer. That's what's on our packaging.
And people are just like, I'll take two.
Yeah, exactly.
That's crazy.
They even have like in a gas station where the cigarettes are kind of behind the counter, there's no images, there's nothing. There's actually cupboard doors covering them up so that people can't like window shop for them and impulse buy them.
Interesting. Those are kind of cool small little tactics. Yeah, that's pretty smart.
Yeah, especially given like how much money the government makes from tax on those items as well.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah, I know
they're shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah, exactly. I know some states like rack up on taxes, like the like in New York City, it'll be like $8, we'll say, for the pack, but you pay 22 or something like that. I might be way off, so I apologize to anyone, but I know the tax equivalent is huge like that. So
yeah, that sucks. No, definitely. Yeah, tobacco and gambling are huge, like huge tax profits for our country.
Interesting. Gambling is such a weird one here because they're like, well, you can gamble, but I don't know. Like only very, very specific licensure allows gambling places to exist. Yeah, it's weird. I don't know. But anyway, first question I have for you is what part of Australia are you from?
So I'm down south, an hour from Melbourne. So I'm in a slightly smaller city than Melbourne. It's called Geelong. And it's like a bayside city. Geelong.
Okay.
Yeah. Americans always pronounce it Geelong.
Geelong. Yeah. Geelong. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'll make sure I say it right if I ever make it out there.
Yeah. Good. Thanks. But yeah, even like in Melbourne, people kind of talk about my town like it's a small town. But it's, I think it's about 270,000 people or 280,000 people. And even when I got my grad year, when I finished uni, I went and worked at a Melbourne hospital just because I thought there was more to learn there and be exposed to and whatever. And people were like, some of the staff there were like, oh, you live in Geelong? Oh, yeah, you would have to commute to Melbourne because there's probably no hospital down there, is there? I'm like, there's four hospitals here. Uh-huh. Like, do you think we just travel like 2 hours to go to a hospital? No.
Now, you said I remember when we talked on the phone, your first hospital job was kind of in ratchet maybe, or what was it, like kind of in the hood, yeah. Basically, right?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. It was very colorful. So we do, straight out of uni, you get a grad year nursing, which means that it's like 12 months of extra supported nursing, so that's educated to come around and help you. You can ring them up at any time and be like, hey, I'm about to do this procedure for the first time, can you come and help me? And you also do more education days, and they give you rotations. So most hospitals do two rotations. I did three, and my last one was emergency, and it was an eye-opener. I'm glad it wasn't my first one. It was very colorful in there. It was also extremely stretched for resources. So it was busy in there, it was chaos in there all the time. People would be like lying down on the floor in the waiting room because they just would have to wait for like 14 hours to be seen.
14 hours, woof.
Sometimes, yeah.
I've only experienced that once when I was in school still. I was in med school still, and it was during ER, and we just got slammed for some reason. It was like, yeah, people were waiting out in the lobby for like 12, 16 hours to get seen, and some people were, you know, with chest pain or with like weird abdominal pain suggestive of a bleed, but there were so many people like that even those were waiting 4 or 5 hours. It was it was a weird day. That shift sucked because I was just running around seeing patients, and I'm a student still, so I'm not even getting paid. I'm making someone else money to do all this. It was terrible. Luckily, I graduated. Now I get paid to be stressed out, so it's nice. But that was tough.
I feel like now if I went to emergency now, and for myself as a patient, I was like, oh, you know, is it busy in there? I'd be like, what category am I? Because if I'm like a cat five, I don't know how your system works, where you guys are, but like it's obviously categorized. So a cat one is like basically extremely unstable. A cat two is like has to be seen within 5 minutes, etc. And if you're like, if you've stubbed your toe, then you're a cat five and you're getting seen dead last out of everyone in this waiting room. So I think now I would ask what category I am. And if I'm a really low category, then I could probably just go to the doctor tomorrow and I would leave.
That's probably true. Save yourself some money and time and just sitting in that gross room full of just grossness. I mean, the waiting room in an ER is so gross. So.
Oh, it is. It is. Definitely.
That's one thing that's nice to know that's the same around the world, I guess, is ER waiting rooms are gross. But
definitely. And remember, too, that it's free for us as well. So there's like, I think it would obviously be busier because people don't have to worry that they won't be covered by insurance or whatever because everything's free. But also just like, you know, you get a lot of people, like you might get drunk people or homeless people coming in to use the bathrooms and stuff. And yeah, or some people present to hospital to have a night off the streets. You know, they might. Like it's a free bed and it's a packet of sandwiches.
Yeah, I'm sure they love that. You know, that's kind of sad.
Yeah, Yeah. To be honest, like if someone gets medically cleared sometimes and we have, if we're quiet and we have room for them, we'll be like, yeah, keep them in until the sun comes up, kick them out as soon as the sun comes up if they have nowhere to go.
Yeah, that's nice at least. Like you said, if you can spare it, yeah.
Yeah, if not, too bad, but...
Yeah, of course. It's, someone who needs the actual bed, obviously, but you were explaining to me also kind of the public versus private system over there. Can you go into that a bit?
Yeah, so you pretty much... everyone should have ambulance cover. It's extremely cheap. Ambulance cover is very cheap, but... Not everyone has health insurance. I actually only have health insurance because I use a lot of allied health, like physios and chiros and stuff, mostly sports related. But if I didn't have that, I wouldn't have hospital cover. I wouldn't have insurance because, one, I'm a fit, well person who doesn't go to hospital a lot. But two, our public health system is really, really good and it's also free. So the only benefit to having private health is that the hospitals are nicer, they're cleaner, the food's better, that sort of thing. And also the wait times are less in emergency. But most importantly for people older than me is that if you have an elective surgery, like maybe a knee reco, for the public health system, you have to go on a non-urgent waiting list, and that could be a year and a half or 2 years. But in private, you can pretty much just check in whenever you want. You can just schedule it and they'll have a spot available for you whenever you're ready, really. So for me, who's generally well, there's not really much benefit.
Yeah, you might as well just take advantage of the free stuff. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So my sister just had her first baby and she cancelled her health insurance before it because she wanted to go through the public system because it's better. She thinks it's better. And I agree with her. Yeah.
That is pretty cool. That does not exist here, as I'm sure you're aware. You said, you said ambulances are cheap. They are so expensive here, like to the point where some people will probably, you know, be having basically a heart attack, you know, and they'll drive themselves to the hospital just because they don't want to pay the ambulance bill.
Well, the ambulance bills are extremely expensive, but the insurance so that you don't have to pay the bill is cheap.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I think I'm kind of making this up, but I remember it being something like $20 a month or something for ambulance cover. It could be even less. But to get an ambulance, like my friend passed out at university and she just has vasovagals pretty often. And the hospital was less than a block away. It was on the same block. And the university policy was that she has to get an ambulance there. So they took her like a couple of doors down and the bill was like $3,500. She didn't have to pay it. It was covered on the uni's insurance, but it was interesting. She got to see the bill and she was like, oh my God, imagine if I didn't have cover. I'm a poor uni student. Imagine $3,500 just for passing out.
Yeah, that would be a nightmare. Okay, just for passing out. And you know what it is too. It's just a vasovagal. Like that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
So is that also free for foreigners? Let's say I was visiting and something happened. Would it be full price for me or would I be covered under the free system as well?
If you had health insurance, your health insurance would cover it. But if you're visiting and you had travel insurance, your travel insurance would cover it. But no, if you don't have travel insurance and you're not a citizen, then you do have to pay. And it's really interesting because that first hospital I worked at that was in a really low socioeconomic area, it was a lot of immigrants and Vietnamese people would bring their family over to visit and they wouldn't get health insurance because they're like, oh, we're not going to be, you know, whitewater rafting, etc. So they just come to stay and look after their grandchildren and stuff. And sometimes they'd have a stroke. And and so they're in ICU and they're in hospital for a long, long time. My first rotation was on a stroke ward. They have to pay for every single thing. And I mean, they have to pay for... Like if you put a cannula in someone and you miss the first one, they have to pay for the first cannula, for the equipment for the first cannula.
Oh my God. So like there's almost motivation to miss if you're looking at a for-profit system.
Yeah, you're a businessman. I like it.
Well, it's just, it's the American way, unfortunately.
Yeah. But like the cotton balls are itemized on the bill, like everything.
Oh God. It's interesting too, because like a lot of the hospitals and like clinic outpatient places here typically are nonprofit, but a lot of them still are for profit. And that's an interesting concept, for profit healthcare. That's like,
because
even the nonprofits make millions a year, but like the for profit ones will cut corners wherever they can. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
It's very different.
Yeah, no, definitely. I agree. But I think too, I've worked in public and private hospitals nursing, and I do find that the private hospitals are a bit more, what's the word, like stingy, like a bit tighter on money, and they're trying to like cut costs all the time and stuff like that. And I think it's just a case of it is run a bit more like a business. When there's in a public hospital, we go, woohoo, we got this government funding, let's spend it.
Yeah, that's true. That's
And
true. Yeah.
it's not as closely monitored, like their finances. I mean, I couldn't possibly know this, but from my observations, it seems that it's not as monitored where the money goes.
Yeah, it seems to make sense in the sense of, you know, if it's a private business, you probably have corporate people looking at every penny spent and being like, where can we maximize these costs? So,
Yes,
yeah. Whereas
definitely.
public is just kind of like there's a public servant doing that job, not like a, you know, I feel like the person watching the money spent is very different at a public versus private hospital, like you said. So, yeah. So, which one do you like better working at, public or private?
If I was a full, so the job that I'm in now is a very big contrast to the last one. So I'm in a public hospital now in, again, quite a busy emergency department. I love that because it stimulates me because I'm exposed to a lot. It's pretty high acuity patients. It's crazy busy in there all the time, so I'm always on my feet, and it's just easier to keep my skills up because I'm exposed to a lot. But when I worked in a private hospital, it was a lot quieter and a lot more peaceful and calm, and the way lower acuity patients, lots of elective surgeries. The emergency department there wasn't even 24 hours yet. So if I was a full-time nurse and I was like maybe in my 40s, I would want to work at the private hospital and earn similar money for doing a lot less work. But because I'm trying to keep my skills up, and a lot of the reason that I enjoy nursing is because it's chaotic, then definitely the busier public hospital is better for me at the
Okay,
moment.
so right now you kind of prefer the busy public.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, got you. That makes sense. Cool. That's a cool deal. I mean, kind of the difference, and you have kind of a future plan in it too. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it's good. But yeah, I feel like at this point in my, like, I only work like about 2 days a week nursing, and I have a full-time business the rest of the time, and I feel like I'm there because I love it, not because I'm not really I hate people who say I'm not here for the money. We're all here for the money, but that's not the first priority for me. This is my first priority in nursing at the moment, is to enjoy it, and I really enjoy where I work at the moment.
Got you, got you. So that's kind of one of the questions I had for you. You know, I want to get into your other businesses as well, obviously, but kind of guess given your success in other businesses, I guess why continue with nursing? What would be your passion? I guess it's your passion for it, right?
I think I think that it's really good for you to be the dumbest person in the room as often as you can be. And I think that I'm around lots of doctors who are incredibly intelligent. I'm around lots of allied health who are, and I'm around lots of nurses. Like, they all sort of know more than me because they're full time and they've been nursing for longer than me. I've only been nursing for about 5 years, and not much of that have I actually been full time. So I just love going to work and being around these incredibly intelligent people. It's so stimulating for me. And like, my other businesses are in the fitness space, which there's so much to learn, there's so much to know, et cetera. But on a day-to-day basis, it's just kind of meathead talk. Like, I'm just talking about lifting weights, and I'm looking at spreadsheets with percentages on them for people's training plans and stuff. And it's just not, I don't feel like I'm learning heaps every day. So that's why I guess my favorite thing about nursing. But I also think it's just good to be exposed to the public, and just like, it's a little bit humbling seeing the, I think seeing, this makes me sound a bit sadistic, but seeing how difficult some people's lives are and the challenges that some people are facing sort of makes you appreciate what you have. And let's face it, when people are in emergency, often they're having the worst day of their lives. And I think being exposed to that just makes you a bit more grateful for your own life
Yeah, that's true.
as
You can
well.
really appreciate everything else with when the worst is going on around you. Yeah.
And I think too, it's also like just being another part of a community. Like, I'm part of a workforce in a hospital, so I go to Christmas parties, and I see women come and go and have babies, and I chat to women who aren't into fitness, and I talk about things outside of fitness. So I think it's just a good exposure thing like that too. The same way that like joining a fishing club or a rowing club or whatever your thing is would help you make friends and be more social.
Now, what are the things you talk about outside of work and fitness with your coworkers?
Complain about men.
That's unfortunate for us, I guess, but it makes sense. We mess up a lot. I get it. So yeah, that's funny.
No, we talk a little bit about like just bar and restaurant recommendations in the area, and like a little bit of I never thought I'd say this, but a little bit of like fashion and stuff. I've sort of recently developed a bit of an interest. I've always been a huge tomboy, but yeah, I talked to my girlfriends at work about fashion and things and about their families. I don't have a lot of friends that have kids. My work friends are kind of the only friends I have that have kids. So it's interesting hearing all that stuff.
Does the stories of your work friends with kids make you more or less inclined to have kids?
I love kids for other people.
Yeah, same. Yeah. Same. I'm like, ugh, scared.
Yeah, right. But I genuinely, like, if I'm at a barbecue and I'm someone's plus one, so I don't know anyone there, and there's a baby there, the whole time I'm just thinking, I want to hold the baby, I want to hold the baby, I want to hold the baby. but yeah, I don't. Look, I'm open to maybe changing my mind one day, but at the moment I have absolutely no intention to ever have children.
Respect, yeah. Totally get that.
Yeah.
I mean, I look at it as, like, something I want to have happen, right? But I just, like, picture the version of me that has that is such a different version of me and so far in the future. But really, like, my time is running out. I gotta figure that out pretty soon. So
how old are you?
I'm 30.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. See, yeah, you didn't disagree there, so you, that means I'm
even, no.
I'm even more like, oh, it even stressed me out more. Thanks for that.
What are you talking about? Your clock doesn't even tick. You can have babies your whole life.
I don't want to be old when they're still young though. That's my thing. So
yeah, okay, but chicks dig older guys, so
that's part of the problem too. That's when you end up with more babies, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the problem. So that's funny. Well, yeah, I don't want to give you and the ladies too much to complain about. So I gotta make sure I'm alive.
I thought you were gonna say too much hope.
Oh God! Well, you can have all the hope you want. That's different. That's funny. So. I remember when we talked on the phone too, you were saying that one of the issues, given kind of how you're pulled in both directions, is maintaining your skills in nursing. How do you go about doing that?
Yeah, look, it's tough. So the nursing, what do you call it? The midwifery board, I guess, in Australia, they have a requirement. You have to do so many hours of mandatory training every year, and you have to be able to prove that, and you can get audited at any time. So if you're full-time, usually that would just be included in like in services and stuff. But if you're casual like I am, where you're feeling lots of shortfalls and stuff, you have to take it upon yourself. So yeah, so I just do like extra training within the organization that I work in throughout the year, basically, which is cool. Like, because I actually quite enjoy it, because I get to choose areas that I'm either weak in or areas that I really enjoy. The last one I did was in wound dressings. I suck at wound dressings. They all look the same to me. And yeah, it's actually a fun day to go in there. I quite like it.
Interesting. Yeah, that's cool. Wounds are an interesting learning experience. Not necessarily a learning experience I love, but they are interesting. And there's always an interesting story behind it. But oof, like, I remember doing like a week on the wound care clinic, and that was a long week.
So yeah, really.
It's tough.
Yeah, I guess it's monotonous, but I like things. I like the blood and guts and gore. So I like things you can see. That's why I don't like respiratory nursing or cardiac nursing. Like, I like wounds and orthopedics and yeah.
It's funny. Like, I really enjoyed my ER rotation. But the thing about it that I was like, there's no way I could do this, were the like diabetic foot wounds, the gross like ulcer wounds on the skin. I know when I'm 40, I'm just not going to want to deal with that. And that's why I just couldn't even get close to it.
Yeah, that's fair. Fair enough. And it's a little bit unsatisfying too, because they're not usually great outcomes. Like a diabetic foot ulcer isn't, some of them never ever heal.
Yeah, or they're just gonna lose that foot. Yeah,
yeah, that's it. Yeah,
I think what did it for me. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And even like knowing that the patient's never going to dial in their nutrition to promote wound healing yeah. either is a little bit depressing.
Yeah, that dude, they're like smoking outside before they walk in the ER.
It's yeah.
like, oh man. I think the story that did it for me was I had this guy come in and he's complaining his leg hurt and he had like a wound on it. So he put a bag over it and he said that he noticed like some weird sound coming from the bag. And I'm like, a weird sound.
Oh, God.
I cut the bag and it's like, I'd say from like his ankle down, like 70% of that whole surface area was just covered in maggots.
No. And they were wriggling around in the bag. They were rustling around in the bag.
Yeah. And he's like, I heard a sound. That's so I came disgusting. In. I'm like, dude, I don't want to deal with this. It was like 1 a.m. And I was like, dude, I don't want to deal with this, man. It's so disgusting. But
oh, my God.
Yeah, he had to get that like surgically debrided and all this other stuff, and I was like, man, that is tough. I could not deal with that for like a career. So kudos to you. I'm like super pumped for you because someone's got to do it. So that's all you. You like that stuff, so that's good.
I think the other key to not de-skilling as well is just not avoiding things. It's when you're busy, it's very easy to go, oh, this person needs a wound, and going to a staff member, hey, I'll go and do obs on your patients while you do my wound because you're good at wounds, you're quicker at it, this is your thing, I'm not that confident in it. And if you just keep avoiding work like that, then you'll never get good at those things, I think, too.
Yeah, that's true, too. That is true. Unfortunately, it's like you got to get good at the stuff you don't like, so.
Yeah, that's right.
Then it gets easier. But that's cool, though. So one of the things we talked about today even was, I guess we're going to kind of transition from purely medical to a little bit of fitness as well. So kind of looking at like macro, like counting macros and stuff on a night shift.
Yeah. 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 One of the, on my Instagram, definitely one of the biggest questions I get asked is how to, well, one of them is how to like stay motivated and fit in training. Like, oh, how do you still get to the gym on night shift? Like, or shift work in general. But definitely the number one question about my nursing that I get on Instagram is how do you stick to your calories on a night shift? I'm so hungry on night shift, and how do I count them, and what should I eat on night shift, etc. And I think that it's really important to kind of see night shift as the same thing but at a different time. So in theory, you can still fit in your training, 8 hours of sleep, you're cooking dinner, and two meals during your shift like you would normally have in a day shift. If you try and just see it as doing exactly the same things but at different times, then I think it just is a little bit less daunting. However, you are going to be less tired. And the reality is that not everyone can sleep perfectly during the day. A lot of people struggle to get to sleep or stay to sleep during the day. So you are going to be more tired. And unfortunately, when you're tired, the hormones leptin and ghrelin, which regulate your hunger signals, they're all out of whack. So you are going to be hungrier if you've had less sleep. So it's not actually because you're up late at night. It's just because you've had less sleep. So the best way to mitigate that is, and I often assume that people's nutrition goals is weight loss because that's the most common one. So if you're trying to be in a calorie deficit and lose weight and you're on a night shift, then I think that you should be eating voluminous foods that aren't too calorie dense. So if you're going to have 2,000 calories of Reese's peanut butter cups in a day, you're going to be hungry all day because that's just not a lot of food. But if you had 2,000 calories of, you know, fruit, vegetables and meat, then you're probably going to be full all day. So having higher volume, lower calorie foods during your shift is a really good way. Like things like celery and carrots and things for snacks is a really good way to keep your calories down, but to still continue eating all day. But another really important thing is counting calories. People normally count calories from when they wake up in the morning to when they go to bed at night. So then often people who are subscribed to my nutrition service are sort of like, oh, well, when do I start my day of calories, if that makes sense? When do my calories reset for the next day? And the answer is, it's up to you. I think it's easier personally to call a day of eating from when you wake up to when you go to bed, no matter what time that is. But some people prefer to go from midnight to midnight and that their calories reset from midnight. So whatever works best for you is fine, really.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think, and people say, well, what should I eat on night shift? Well, what do you like? Eat things that you like that you're going to stick to, that you're not going to throw out and end up eating a chocolate bar instead.
I like the part about the 2,000 calories of Reese's bars, though. I mean, that does sound delicious, but it's not the move. So it's not a good move if you're trying to stay fit. No. But yeah.
No. And I'll be honest, like, I actually eat, like, I don't eat really nutritious foods, generally speaking. Like, I don't eat very healthily. But when I cut weight, sometimes my cravings will be really bad. And if your cravings get too bad, you're just going to fall off the bandwagon and you're going to go off the rails with your diet. So let's say I'm having a day and I'm just overwhelmingly craving junk, like KFC or something. I will have a really low calorie breakfast, a really healthy breakfast with lots of vegetables. And then I'll push lunch as late as possible and I'll have my KFC meal. And now, yes, I have made an irresponsible decision. So now I have to suffer the consequences, which means I've got hardly any calories left for dinner, which means I'm either going to be hungry late at night or I'm going to only be able to have like a salad late at night or whatever. But I've kind of satisfied that craving and now I'm good. I'm good for a while. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, so, like, absolutely.
It's not ideal, but I think that the biggest problem people have in trying to start a diet or to lose weight is that they just try and go all or nothing. They try and go, okay, from when I wake up Monday morning, I'm only going to eat chicken and broccoli. And it's like, it's not sustainable. No one wants to eat chicken and broccoli three meals a day.
No, not even three times a week.
Yeah, right? So I think finding somewhere in the middle is fine.
Yeah, really. Absolutely. And that's kind of like you said, it's the same what you would do if you were working 12 hours during the day. It's just at night. So if you have that craving, go for it. I think it is tough.
And also...
Oh, please go ahead.
Yeah. Also, this... I sort of have to be careful when I say this because it can sound like I'm promoting sort of toxic thoughts towards eating. But you have to also remember that the feeling of hunger isn't going to kill you. If you're trying to lose weight, you're in a calorie deficit. That means that you're consuming less energy than you're burning, you're going to get hungry. So for me, when I finish night shift, I'm always really hungry right at finish time at like 7 a.m. But I know that I'm so tired that if I just went home and went to bed, even though I'm absolutely starving, I got stomach pains, I'm still going to fall straight to sleep because I'm so tired. So I don't need to get McDonald's on the way home. I know that I'll survive if I don't. And it's the same on the floor. Like if I'm cutting weight for a competition, sometimes in between breakfast and lunch when I'm at work, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so hungry, but I'm not going to die.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just a little bit of an uncomfortable feeling that I'm going to have while I'm walking around the hospital, and it's fine. I'll survive.
Absolutely. Yeah. And people might look at you weird, like this girl's about to pass out, but you know, you're meeting your goals. So that's good.
Yeah. And like, I know that I've had like a nutritious breakfast 3 or 4 hours ago and I'm drinking tons of water, so I can absolutely wait until lunchtime. I don't have to snack in between.
Yeah, I do. I personally do like intermittent fasting pretty much every day, so I won't eat till noon, so I'll stop eating around 8 or 9 o'clock. I try to do 16-hour fast, but sometimes I might eat like till 9 or 10 instead of 8. But just getting in and like drinking like a black coffee and then just so much water all morning while I'm rounding and everything. What I realized is by the time lunch rolls around, yeah, I'm hungry, but I'm still fine. And like the rest of the food I'm going to eat throughout the day, I would have eaten whether I ate breakfast or not, but that still kind of saves the calories. It also gives you that really good bowel rest, which we know is good for recovery of the, you know, GI tract, and it's good for, you know, hormone rebalancing. And it's just a really good, there's ample research showing it. So there's multiple ways to kind of cut calories or just balance your feeding burden. And I think those are two really good ones. Yeah, those are two really good ways.
I think intermittent fasting is excellent if that's what helps you stick to your calories. So if I sleep in, then I'm not hungry until after lunchtime, really. So I sort of end up, if I'm on a routine like I am now, I end up not eating anything until like 1 p.m. each day. So I guess I'm kind of accidentally intermittent fasting often as well. And so it's actually a really good way to stick to your calories if that's how you stick to them better. But I do have a problem with people kind of stating that it's a superior way to lose weight. I think people think that you're burning more because you're starving for that time. You're not. It doesn't matter whether you have your calories spread out throughout the whole day or whether you have them all in one sitting. But if it's going to help you stick to your calories, then it's a great idea.
Yeah, it's like any diet or fad or way of eating that's new for someone, you're going to lose weight. I mean, if you go on Atkins or you go on the, what is it, the California beach diet, whatever it's called, or you cut out sugar or you cut out, you know, whatever, your body's going to adjust in like a really good way no matter what. So there is no right way. And I probably won't do intermittent fasting forever. You know, it's just the one I'm doing now. And it's like, I'll move to the next one and I'll get results that way too. So it's anyone listening should understand that there's not just one way. There's plenty of ways to meet your goals.
And every diet that works, when you hear someone say, oh, I did this diet, I lost that diet, and I lost weight. You lost weight because you're in a calorie deficit. It doesn't matter which diet you choose. As long as you're in a calorie deficit, you're going to lose weight.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if a diet, in quotation marks, doesn't work, it's just because you're eating too much. Like, you weren't in a calorie deficit.
You look at like the food logs or like the real food log. If you could like watch them eat, you're like, oh, so that's why it didn't work, because you ate X, Y, and Z when you're not supposed to. It's not part of the diet, but you did it anyway. So,
yeah, exactly. And it's so the thing that I even struggle with is if I'm nursing and a patient brings in chocolate or something, tracking that one or two chocolates that you grab on your way past the nurse's station, those little things, or if you go out for dinner with your partner and you have half a slice of their pizza, throughout the day, those things add up so much, but people just don't log those things.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't count them. Often they're too hard to count. Like if you have three crackers with hummus on them or something, it's hard to sort of track that.
Yeah, you have to log
it. Just don't track it.
Yeah, you're like, okay, 3/4 of a cup of hummus, and then like 4 crackers, or like 1/8 of a serving, because the serving is like 20 crackers. So you're like 1/8. You're like, oh my God, so annoying. That's true. So one of the things, obviously, you know, you're super jacked. So do you ever get annoyed at work when people, like something needs to be moved? Do they always come and find you to move stuff?
They do that a little bit, but I think that well, the scrubs hide the gains pretty well, to be honest. But more so, I hate it when like I can't open something when I'm nursing.
Oh, no.
And everyone's like, there's so much expectation on me, like, come on Paige, what, you can't open that? Like, I can't open a lid or something, or I can't get a bum off an IV or something, and everyone's kind of laughing on me. So much pressure, guys.
I know, they're just waiting on you to fail. They're like, oh, watch, I bet you can't get that. That's so funny. That's hilarious. Yeah, I bet. You know, the thing too, I would just imagine, maybe, especially if you were here, I don't know about there, but here, the older guys, like when I say older, like 50-year-old doctors or something like that, they're going to want to challenge you in their own like little ways, because like they want to show like they're strong too. That
yeah, but I think gen pop non-medical staff always ask me like, oh, like, you know, your strength must come in handy, like moving patients and stuff. But I'm sure it's the same way you guys are, that we have like no lift policy. So there's pretty much a way of moving every single person. I actually did my training in this yesterday. But yeah, like we don't ever really take the weight of a patient. Like if we do, like they're on slide sheets and stuff, and anyone can do that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's good. It's not the old school way where you're just like deadlifting someone off the bed or something. So
yeah, look, we've all cut corners with lifting patients, but yeah. I had one actually. I had a back injury nursing once. I was in emergency and we had no idea about this guy's mobility, and I got him up to put him on the Komodo. So I was just like pivot transferring him. I wasn't walking him anywhere. And he looked fine. I stood him up first, made sure he was okay. I asked him to march on the spot. He seemed okay. And then I went to pivot him around to the commode, and he just went to like collapse. Like his knees just bent out from underneath him. And I had the bed up pretty high because I was using it to help him stand. And so I couldn't really like push him back onto the bed. And I knew, like, it did actually occur to me quick enough, like, don't catch him, you'll hurt yourself. But I can't just let this poor old sick man fall. So, of course, I tried to catch him a little bit, and I had, like, a back injury for only a few days. But, it was eye-opening for me, though, that it is easy and you can be fit and strong and still hurt yourself as well.
Yeah, it's like doing a huge deadlift without a warm-up, or, like, a squat without a warm-up. You're going to blow your back out.
Yeah, that's it. And also, like, you're always on an awkward angle when it's an emergency like that. You know, you're not walking up to a barbell and lifting with perfect form. You're catching someone who's in front of you.
Mm-hmm. It's like moving a barbell that just completely gives, like, goes limp when you pick it up. But it still weighs the same.
Yeah, that's right.
No help at all.
And you're also, like, holding it out in front of your person, not You know what I mean? Like, it's not close to your center of gravity.
Exactly. That's awful. Yeah. So it can happen to anyone, anytime. And you don't think about how quick that can happen too. You're just like, oh, well, here's a guy. I got the bed up and boom, you're on the floor under him or something. That's no fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
So given the, you know, jacked nature of yourself, what was kind of your route into fitness becoming like, you know, just getting into it, and then kind of how did it grow into one of your businesses?
Yeah, so I just started going to the gym. I think like a lot of people, just because I wanted to look better, I guess, look better naked, hey? And I was lifting weights. And it's interesting because no one really introduced me to the gym. No one was kind of like, hey, come with me, I'll show you what to do. I just started going, and I didn't think, what sort of training do I want to do? I just went straight to the weight section. And looking back, I can see that that's slightly unusual for a girl. Most girls will go to like the cardio equipment, or, you know, they'd be doing like the booty workouts and stuff. I wanted to train like chest, and most girls don't want to do that when they first start. So I just went straight to the weight section, not really knowing that the way that I was training was very a lot more popular with men than it is with women. And honestly, as soon as I did like my first session, I was like, I want to be the biggest, most muscular woman alive. Like, I just wanted to be so jacked. And to the point where, like, I'd rather look shockingly big than attractively toned.
Okay.
Like, I wanted to look comical. So I just fell in love with, I guess, just building muscle. And so that's what I was doing. I just fell in love with the gym, and it was my favorite part of every day. And it was all I was thinking about. And then also, by the way, at this stage, I was full-time nursing, and I was also, I used to be a dancer. So I was dancing like 20 hours a week and nursing like 34 hours a week, and then training like 8 hours a week. Probably more than 8 hours a week. And then, so I was exhausted all the time. My nutrition was trash. And I was sleeping an average of like 4 or 5 hours a night. And then one night, I told my girlfriend, I was like, she goes to the gym as well. And I was like, hey, I squatted 100 kilos. And she was like, dude, that's pretty good for your body weight. She said, my partner, is a powerlifting coach. And I'd never heard of powerlifting. And she said, he reckons that if you did a competition, you'd actually do okay. And I just kind of shrugged it off, didn't even look up really what powerlifting was, but she told me I was strong, and I was like, oh, that's cool, but I don't know how credible it is. And then a few months later, I met a group of guys who are quite serious about powerlifting, and I said, tell me more about it, like, what is this for? And I said, show me the Instagram of a girl who does it. And so they showed me like a video of this girl lifting. Her name is Becky Gleach. She's an Australian powerlifter, and she's won nationals a few times, and she's got yeah, her rap sheet's pretty amazing in powerlifting. So I literally just messaged her, and I was like, hey, I know you don't know me. I live 2 hours away from you. Can I just come and train with you? I just want to like have a taste of it and see what it's like. And she's like, yeah, okay. So we're still friends. I now program her for powerlifting. I coach her.
That's sweet.
Yeah, we still like during Rona, we've been like FaceTiming a whole heap and stuff. So she's a really good friend of mine. And then it just honestly just took off from there. So that was when I heard of powerlifting properly for the first time, and 8 months later I was competing at nationals. So I dropped like 7 kilos to make a lower weight class, and then I came fourth at nationals. So that was incredible.
That is incredible.
It all happened so quickly for me, but I peaked too soon and I'm washed up already.
I don't know about all that, but so that was your powerlifting, and then you also got involved in strongman as well.
Yeah. So I wouldn't say they go hand in hand, but I've got a really, my best lift is my bench press, and that has a really good carryover to overhead pressing. And so I was just kind of curious, you know, like my coach was a strong man, and he was kind of like, yeah, I reckon you'd do pretty well if you did overhead pressing, and there's lots of overhead in strongman. So I thought, oh, I'll give it a shot. And so have you seen those? It's called a monster dumbbell or a circus dumbbell. It's like a giant dumbbell, and it's a single one, and you lift it over your head. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that before?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, give me a crack at that. And so the first time I ever picked it up, I did a 40-kilo dumbbell, and I went home and Googled what the Australian record was. And at the time, it was like 27 kilos or something. So I was like, oh, shit, okay, I might be good at it. And we all love stuff that we're good at, don't we?
Oh, of course,
so, yeah. So it was just good for my ego. So I just pursued it a little bit. I ended up getting that Australian record at one stage, which was short-lived. It's been beaten since. But yeah, I want to go for it again next year when Rona's over. But yeah, they do go hand in hand a little bit. If you're good at one, you're probably a little bit good at the other. But it's a bit more like CrossFit in that there's more moving, more running, more carrying stuff. And not so much static lifts where you stand still.
You know, that's interesting that bench is your best one of the big three, because typically that's like, at least here, when I've been to the different meets I've been, it's like guys and girls will come in, and I saw one, this guy pulled like 585, he squatted like 495, and he benched like 215. I was like, what is going on? And this is in pounds, not kilos, but
yeah.
I'm like, what is going, how is your bench so weak? This guy was massive. He was like 5'10", 5'9", whatever, just like pure muscle. But his bench was trash. I was like, man, that's disappointing, man. I don't know how, like, I think the biggest bench that day was like 375. I was like, what is going on?
Really? Yeah. Yeah, but it's a shit lift to be good at, though, because so the way that powerlifting works is you get 3 attempts at your squat, 3 attempts at your bench, and 3 attempts at your deadlift. And the highest weight that you lift, oh, they're both for one rep, right? And the highest weight that you lift successfully for each that the judges have deemed a good lift gets added up to a total. So your best squat, your best bench, and your best deadlift get added up to your total. And then the highest total in that weight class wins. So let's say, I'm making up numbers here, but let's say my bench press is 20% better than everybody else's. That's only going to add like 15 kilos to my total. But if my deadlift was 20% better than everybody else's, that's going to add like 35 kilos or 40 kilos to my total. So I have a better chance of winning, and I'm a more competitive athlete if I'm a really great deadlifter, in theory, than if I'm a really great bench presser. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
So yeah, the bench is, doesn't go a long way in improving your total, unfortunately.
Yeah, I guess that's true. You can really pack on just because there's so many more little things you can do to tweak your squat and deadlift. There's not much. I mean, you hit shoulders harder, you hit core harder, maybe a little back for the scapular retractions. But, you know, it's like there's not as many little things you can tweak. It's kind of just you have it or you don't for bench more so than the other two.
Yes, but I also think bench is more hit and miss. A bench is more technical in that it's easier to stuff up. So if you pull a shit deadlift, you can probably just recover with brute strength. But if you hit the wrong spot on your chest in a bench, or you lose tension on your chest or whatever, or you forget to drive with your legs, if you make one tiny little mistake, the whole thing's done, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you'll just miss. Yeah.
Do you arch, I assume, right? But do you do, like, have you seen those videos where it's like they're playing the X-Files theme and like that girl is like,
yeah,
like almost how are you arch that hard? How, what would you rank your arch like compared to that versus flat?
It was probably like an 8 or a 9, and then I had a back injury which just limits my mobility a little bit, and now it's probably like a 5 or a 6. But basically everyone who is powerlifting is arching to the best of their ability. Like, I often get asked, why do girls arch and guys don't? And the answer is that girls are more mobile. They just have the flexibility to get in the arch position harder. If you ask any competitive powerlifting male, if you could arch harder, would you? The answer is, of course. You know, it's because it's like, you know, the negative connotation is that arching is cheating. And absolutely it is. It's shortening the range. It's helping you. So you use it if you can. You know, if you're running a marathon and I could wipe 5 kilometers off, you would take it.
Yeah, exactly. I know I would. Sheesh.
Yeah. Why you want to run further than everyone else?
Yeah, exactly. And you still get the same time. Then again, everyone gets that 5 kilometers off, and then it's like, now it's the same race. But I guess that's but that's fine though. Then it's the same race. So
yeah.
And if you're the one like simp not doing that, you're just running the extra 5K. It's like, why? what are you doing?
That's exactly right. Yeah. So many people don't understand that. You have no idea. Like, so many, if you're not in powerlifting, you probably have no idea why we're arching our backs, meaning we're all a bunch of idiots under the
canvas. Yeah. No, I know how it goes. I personally just like, I don't know. I just think it's just do what you can to win, especially in a sense if the playing field's the same. So I don't know.
Exactly. To me, that's like not using a bike in a triathlon because you think the bike is cheating. You should do it the old fashioned way.
You're going to use a unicycle instead.
yeah. Or walk. It's like, well, the bike's loud and everyone you're competing against is using a bike. So why would you not use a bike?
you're like, well, I think it shortens the range of motion, so I'm gonna stick to yeah. the purest way, and I'm gonna walk. Yeah, no,
that's not. I'm not a cheater. I'm not using a bike.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not a cheater. Everyone else is using a bike though. In the competition where the bike is completely legal. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, what about sumo deadlifting? Do you think sumo's cheating?
No, I don't. I don't think people understand. Like, I think sumo is harder to nail. I think it's a harder movement. And honestly, that's mostly why I don't do it. And also sumo is not allowed in strongman. So if I want to train for both, it makes sense to just do conventional all the time. But no, I do not think it's cheating. I think that if you can do it well, I envy you because it's a lot more technically difficult.
So I pull sumo when I'm just pulling, but then... Mm-hmm. So I used to do CrossFit pretty heavily too. And so obviously the Olympic lifts are included. And so for the longest, I would be doing like my sumo deadlift and I do over, I don't do over under. And then I realized I'm not really helping myself for my cleans or my snatches. So I started just doing traditional and like, I'm so bad. My deadlift is already pretty weak and it went down like 80 pounds when I went from sumo. But it's like I'm getting the good range of motion and probably is better on my back not going that as heavy because I just physically can't go as heavy, and my snatches and my cleans have really gotten improved, so it's
great. Yeah,
it's cool. And if I'm really struggling though, if I'm like, all right, I'm gonna get this weight because I'm at the gym and everyone's looking, I'm like, all right, I'm gonna get this, I'll pull sumo and like over under. But I try to pull over just so I can like replicate the same motion for the clean and the snatch as well. So
but, that's a really good rationale. Yeah.
Yeah. But
that's exactly what, if you're my client, that's exactly what I tell you to do. Like if you want to be a powerlifter, you should be lifting how you're going to lift in a powerlifting comp. But if you want to benefit your other lifts, your ollie lifts, then you're doing exactly what I think you should do.
I don't even want to know what my numbers are right now. I haven't touched a barbell since February. So I've been working out every day, but it's like, you know, the gyms are still closed and it's impossible to find equipment. Like it's impossible to find dumbbells or a bar or anything. And so I don't even want to know, like I can probably snatch like 95 pounds, maybe like 100 pounds now, you know, and not blow my shoulder out. So it's embarrassing.
Yeah. No, you're right. There's still like gyms have reopened here. They're just closed again in Melbourne, but everywhere else they're open. But yeah, you still can't get equipment. Like I've actually been manufacturing it because there was such a demand. Like I was just getting inundated with messages from my followers being like, hey, do you know where I can get equipment? And I was just like saying no. And then I was like, oh, maybe I'll start making some. So I was manufacturing like squat stands and benches and stuff. I was upholstering the benches myself in some guy's garage. I rang this guy and I was like, just from Google, he was a welder. And I was like, hey man, I'm going to send you through some photos. Can you make these racks and benches? And he was like, he rang me back. He's like, yeah, I can make those. And I'm like, when do you want to start? And he's like, I'm free today. And I was like, okay. So I started working in this guy's. I never met this guy. Now we're working together in this welding garage together every day, making this gym equipment. It was so much fun.
That's hilarious. That's awesome. So that is one of your side businesses as well. What else do you have? I guess you have the fitness industry. Kind of what avenues within the fitness industry do you work in?
Through my Instagram, I market my business, and basically I do online coaching for people. So I write programs and they send me videos and I watch them back every week. And a lot of them are competing. So not all of them, but a lot of them are. And so I often go to their competitions and coach. And I also have a nutrition business. So, I've got, Ash, who is very overqualified for her job. She's just finishing her PhD in sports nutrition, and she does the nutrition side for my clients. And then what else do I do? I also own like a gym, like a little studio, which is mostly for filming my own content, but I've also had other PTs working there in the past. And I do a few coaching sessions there a week, not very many, but that's basically what I do. And then I do like a little bit of sponsorship stuff as well through my Instagram. So that's been really helpful during COVID when I've had to close the gym. I think that's it.
Yeah, probably not. You probably got more. You're just so busy that you forgot. That's pretty cool. So
that's it, but.
Sorry, go ahead.
It's obviously the face-to-face coaching had to stop when coronavirus occurred. And then the online coaching, a lot of people didn't have access to gyms, so I don't really want to keep charging them for online coaching if they can't train. So I lost a little bit of income there. But the nutrition stuff's been really good because, I mean, people have control over what they're eating. If they're stuck at home and they're not dining out and they're not going out drinking, this is a really good time for people to be nailing their nutrition or learning to nail their nutrition.
Yeah, going out drinking decreased, but maybe home drinking is up exponentially.
Yeah, that's true.
That's pretty sweet. And one of the things I wanted to ask when we were talking about kind of your competing is maybe just tell us a little bit about like competition day. What's your prep for it? What's your mental status? Like, how do you get it? How do you get prepared for it mentally?
I'm really lucky that I'm like the least anxious person ever. And like in every sense of the word. So I don't really get nervous for a competition. I get anxious the weeks coming up that I'm not going to make weight. And then once I've made weight 24 hours before the competition, I'm just like smooth sailing. Like I'm just excited. I'm just there to do the part that I love. But I also think that something I really like about the sport is that there's no pressure on myself really, because let's say my best deadlift's 160 kilos. If a girl rocks up who's got a 200 kilo deadlift in my weight class, there's nothing I can do to beat her.
Like, yeah, don't even sweat.
I can't pull an extra 40 kilos out of my butt to beat this girl. So, like, it almost feels like, yes, you can poorly execute lifts and miss them because of that and get a lower score, but you can't magically get stronger on the day. So once you're there, there's not a lot you can do. Just concentrate and be everywhere you need to be on time and don't miss lifts in that sense. But yeah, I just feel like it's out of my control at that stage. Like the hard work's been done in the gym. I've made weight, so I don't need to worry about that. I can eat whatever I want. It's just my job to stay hydrated, have some fun and eat. And to be honest, like I pick up vibes from other people, but I'm usually like sitting in between lifts. I'm sitting in between the crowd, like hanging out with them, like whatever. Right before my lifts, I need to like force a little bit of internal aggression to kind of amp myself up a bit. But in between lifts, like I'm just hanging out, chatting, having a laugh with the other competitors. I think it's a really fun day. I love it. I love meeting new people. Like we're in a pretty niche sport. It's a pretty small sport in Australia, it is. So like I want to meet as many people as I can and make some friends and yeah, get connected in the industry as well. So I don't get that nervous. I just have a lot of fun doing it.
That's awesome. Yeah. And like you said, not being anxious about it is beneficial in the first place, but then that realization like, all right, someone has a, as you said, 200 kilo. I'm trying to think of the conversion, but yeah, 200 kilo deadlift. You're like, what am I going to do about that? So that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No point in losing sleep or losing like your own lift over that. So.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I love the sport as much as the next powerlifter, but in the scheme of the world, missing like, you know, I see people like cry because they missed a deadlift and I'm like, is it that big of a deal? Like no one died and like, and also no one really cares but you. So like if you go in there expecting to get a score, you let yourself down, you haven't let anyone else down. No one else really cares. So
yeah,
I just think like it's not an end of the world problem sort of thing.
That's true. That's a good mentality because like even those people are clearly super dedicated and they're super driven. They want to succeed. But like you said, I mean,
yeah,
no one else is disappointed in you. You know, your mom watching is not going to be like, oh, I can't believe you didn't do that. You know, it's just they're just proud of you. Yeah, exactly. They're just proud of you for competing and doing your best. So no point in fretting. Exactly. That's a good point. I say
and
that
also,
as
I like.
Oh, go ahead. As what?
Also, I worked on the stroke ward nursing for a few months in my grad year, and there was people who were like 24 and just had a baby who have had strokes and they can't walk or talk and they're being peg fed. And I think like you crying because you missed like a triple body weight deadlift seems a little bit trivial to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you shouldn't minimize people's problems by comparing them to others, but I don't know, like you're so lucky that you're like athletically that you can even go to the gym. You're so lucky that you have the capacity to go to the gym and move your body.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's truly a blessing that can be taken so fast. And so it's like, even then it can be changed because there's people who say, oh, I hurt, I got a bad knee, so I can't go to the gym. But I remember, I'll never forget when I used to work out at University of Miami, there was this kid there who maybe had some sort of like palsy or something. I mean, you'd see him walking through the gym and he's shuffling, his legs are barely working, but that guy was doing squats, that guy was doing deadlifts, he was doing leg presses, extensions, curls. He wasn't making an excuse to skip leg day. You got bros all over the world making an excuse not to do legs just because like they got a bum knee. Come on, man.
Yeah,
that's tough. Absolutely. So you're not going to get my support on that, but otherwise, yeah, there's always a way you can find it. And yeah, like you said, don't fret over stuff that's out of your control. I totally agree.
Yeah, definitely. I had a back injury. I've got like a chronic back injury. And I've had it for, must be almost a couple of years now, a year and a half now. And I basically can't squat at all. And can you imagine how frustrating that is? Like my whole living is a sport of powerlifting, which is just three lifts and I can't do one of them. So like incredibly frustrating. And I've lost so much strength. It's so bad for my ego. And like, I'll admit like once or twice I've cried over it because I've like rehabbed it for so long, tried to squat once. And, yeah. So I hurt my back and I couldn't squat. Well, I still can't really squat at full capacity. And you can imagine in a sport that is also my living, my passion and my living, not being able to do one of the three lifts is incredibly frustrating. And I'll admit that like I've fought over it before. I've, you know, done months and months of rehab and then tried to squat once and completely flared it up again and I've cried over it. But the bigger picture is I'm like, cool, so what else can I do? All right, let's do bodybuilding for a few months and see how that goes. So that's what I'm doing right now. And then I've taken up running just because being so sedentary during coronavirus has given me itchy feet, I guess. So like I'm still doing all these things with my body and like now I've got this new sciatica, which is very frustrating. And I can hardly get it. It's weird because I can hardly get out of bed. I can't tie up my shoelaces. I've had to replace all my shoelaces with those elastic ones. But I can still run and I can still like lift heavy weights and I can still do lunges and all this stuff. So I'm just doing everything I can instead of like crying about the things that I can't, I guess. Which hasn't always been the way. I've gone through a phase of absolutely feeling sorry for myself. But yeah, now I'm just celebrating what I can do instead of crying about what I can't, I guess.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Got to adapt and just get past that nonsense and hopefully your back will heal up. That sucks. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I hope so. But anyway.
But yeah, you're working around it. So that's good. Just don't catch any more patients. That's the big thing.
Yeah, that's true. No more patient catching.
So one of the last questions I have besides the wrap up questions is one of my favorites. What did you get in trouble for as a kid?
Oh, I've got a bad one.
Uh-oh, here we go.
So when I was 14, I went to a public school and it was a little bit rough and my parents were not rough. And so they had normal rules and expectations of me. And they were, but compared to my other friends, they were incredibly strict because my other friends' parents didn't really care where their kids were. So I thought my parents were so strict and they wouldn't let me go to like parties and stuff with my friends or even sometimes sleepovers. So I stopped asking permission and just started saying goodnight at like 10 o'clock and then getting someone to come and pick me up and sneaking out basically. And we lived on like a hobby farm, so like 23 acres. And, it was just easy to, I just go out the front door and then run off to the road and wait for someone to come and pick me up. And then one night no one could pick me up. And I was like, well, I'll just put mum and dad's car on the front fence during the day so that they don't hear it start up. And then I'll just drive myself. And so I was 14. You don't get your driver's license until you're 18 in Australia. And my friend and I just like waited for mum and dad to go to bed. And then we snuck out and we just went for a drive. We weren't doing anything bad while we were gone. And like, we were really well behaved. Like we weren't really drinking. We weren't going anywhere near boys. Like we were doing the right thing once we were out, but we weren't allowed to be out. So I went and picked up a friend. The two of us were just kind of going for a drive, hanging out. And then a police officer was, you know, when you're going down like a narrow street and one of you has to pull over to let the other one pass because there's like cars parked both ways. They were coming the other way and I pulled over and it was just clumsy. Like I just kind of panicked because I saw that it was like a cop car. And so I kind of pulled over, but I kind of like hit the curb a little bit and whatever. And so they were already suspicious. And then when they put their headlights in my car, they could see that I probably looked pretty young and that there was three of us in there at 3 o'clock in the morning on like a Wednesday morning or whatever. So, I drove away and I just went left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right to try and get away from them. And then we just ditched the car and like ran away from it. And they stopped and pulled over and talked to us on foot. And they're like, what are you guys doing? And we're like, oh, I've been at a friend's place. Now we're going home. And we gave like the address of one of our friends and they were like, okay, cool. But we knew they'd come back and check on us. So we kept walking in the same direction away from the car. And they did. They came back to check on us. And we're like, okay, now that they've checked, let's run back to the car. So we ran back to it. And I started driving. I dropped my friend off, started driving home. But they'd already gotten the number plate of the – or the registration plate of the car. And so they knew my address. So they went back a second time to look for the car. It wasn't there. So they started driving to my house.
Oh, and God.
I ended up pulling out in front of them and so they were behind me and so I was like speeding up. It's just like country roads, remember, it's not like in the city. And so I'm like speeding up, they're gaining on me, they're speeding up too. So then when I get over the crest, like this hill near my house, I turn my headlights off. Now I'm driving with no headlights and I pull into my driveway and hide the car in like bushes. And then I see them driving through my driveway and they've got like spotlights all over my property. And I'm like, oh man, they're gonna go knock on the door and wake my mom up anyway. Like, I think the gig's up. So I just went and waved them down. And I was like, hello, my name's Paige. I'm 14. I don't have a license. My mom thinks I'm in bed. She's in the house. And they were like, okay, let's go inside and wake mom up.
That's probably smart to just go ahead and do that. Yeah.
Yeah, right. But yeah, it was a $580 fine. And I was so grounded. I wasn't even allowed to ride my horse on the nature strip.
Oh,
like, you've
man.
Never seen someone so grounded.
Yeah, seriously. It was just, that was it. You existed pretty much.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, that's bad. Pretty good. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I like that. That's a good story.
What's the most trouble you've been in?
The most trouble I got in. So usually it's just like, you know, stupid stuff. Like, oh, stole candy as a kid, like from my own house. Not like I stole it at the store, but just like something was hidden and that I wasn't supposed to eat. And then I ended up eating it. And funny story about that, actually, before I think of the other story is, my mom used to always hide the candy at the top of the cupboard. And so I was little, I could just climb the cupboard and I would climb the shelves and get to the top and I would take candy out and I would climb back down. And she never really figured it out until one day I climbed up. You know, I got older and probably got fatter from eating all the candy. And so I was climbing up and the shelves just come tumbling down. I broke like all the shelves.
And it's like this huge. What you're doing.
Oh, yeah. It's a huge commotion. My mom comes down and she's just like, all right, well, the gig is up. So that didn't happen too many more times. But I remember I was in college and I don't know. It was just like there was a house party that we went to and it got raided pretty bad. And I felt bad because the kid's house it was, he's the one who got in trouble. So there was like a lot of people that the party got out of hand pretty quick. It was weird. It was supposed to just be like a little tiny get together. And then it ended up being like 200 people. And so there was just cars all through this neighborhood. And it's like this rich, quiet neighborhood. And so the cops got called and they came in and they had like everyone huddled around and parents started showing up and kind of just extracting kids as they went, and I got yelled at. So like me and four of my other friends all went to one other person's house and kind of just got reamed out by the parents. And then I don't know, it wasn't, so that was like the worst. That was like the worst I did. I didn't really like do anything
How
bad.
How old
were you? I was like 19. This is like in college. I was like in college, but
yeah, when you said in college, I was like, why are people getting their parents rang? Like, who rings their parents when they're in college?
Well, it was like everyone there was, people were in high school, people were in college. So it was kind of like a little bit of everything. Like, we had just graduated and then there were like juniors and seniors in college that we played sports with and we were in high school still. And so they were all there. And so parents were coming from all over and they just kept bringing more and more cops in because more and more parents kept showing up. So it kind of blew up into a whole thing, but luckily we got extracted. Now I do remember, it did, but it was empty. They had moved out already. So it was just an empty house. So it's not too bad, but I do remember another time as a kid, same kind of situation happened, but we all just took off. Like everyone just scattered and me and my other buddies were just kind of just hiding in the on the golf course, and that was pretty terrifying when you're young. When you're young, you're just like hiding in the brush for like 2 hours, scared to death. So I pretty much learned my lesson. I just gave up after that and just waited till I got 21. So I was like, that's it.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. You grounded yourself.
Yeah, pretty much. I was like, you know what? I'm tired of being terrified hiding in the bushes. So I gave up. I just kind of calmed down.
I'm mostly confused that someone threw a party in an empty house. Like, hey guys, come over, like bring a keg, but like there's nowhere to sit, but like we'll sit around in a circle on the floor.
It was actually awesome because if you think, you know, you got to keep the house together. If it's a normal, you know, furnished house, you're like, no, don't sit over there, don't break that. We could just do whatever we wanted. I mean, and there were a lot of people. There were like 200 kids there. So it's like,
Jesus.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about anything getting broken. There's no paintings on the wall. There's no, you know, couch to spill on.
There was no room for furniture.
Yeah, it was sweet. Yeah, in that sense. But the amount of cops that showed up was not fun. But
yeah, no.
But yeah, it was cool. It wasn't too bad. So that was good. We just talked for like over an hour. It kind of went by fast, didn't it?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it did. Wow.
So I like to ask 4 questions of all my guests at the end to wrap up. You want to do those, and then we'll get you out of here?
Yeah, let's do them.
All right, sweet. So I know that nursing is kind of only one of your different avenues that you focus on, but still I'd love to get your opinion on it. So the first question is, what are keys to success in nursing?
I think being an eagerness to learn is definitely one of them. I think confidence in your ability as well. And I think communication, like, I hope that every person you meet, whether they are more or less qualified than you, you can kind of accept that you have something to learn from that person. And probably just diversity, like putting yourself in as many different situations as possible, I think.
Okay, got you. Perfect. And then the second question is, has practicing nursing been what you expected?
Oh, that's a good question. Gosh, I can't even remember what I expected of nursing. I think so. I honestly, before I signed up for university as a nurse, I hadn't spent any time in hospital as a patient, as a visitor, as anything. So I honestly didn't really know what to expect. So I feel like my first exposure was almost my first placement. So yeah, I think it was what I expected.
Okay, that's pretty funny. That's cool that you went, at least even as a guest, staying there, so that's good at least.
Yeah, why did I do this?
Yeah, you're just like, whatever, I'll go for it. I don't know anything about it, but I'll go for it.
Yeah,
that's sweet. Exactly. And it worked out. That's perfect. So,
yeah.
And so now that, you know, have your own career in nursing, what would be your advice to those coming up? So maybe in nursing school or maybe even looking to go into nursing school?
Don't feel pressure to choose an area that you want to work in. I think everybody asks it as a conversation starter, you know, what the whole time you're through uni, they're asking you, what do you want to do? And it's okay to not know. And it's okay to never know. You never have to commit to like one area. That's the beauty of nursing. But I encourage, I know a lot of nurses here discourage their maybe their daughters from becoming nurses. I encourage it because if you decide that you don't want to do it professionally forever, what a great skill set and what a great exposure to the world to use in your personal life. Like if I ever had kids, like I feel like I can understand their health so much better. And like there's been a few times where I got to play the hero in like a public situation where people enjoy that. I just think it's a great obviously, from a business perspective, it's never going to go out of fashion. You're always going to have a job in nursing, and we've seen that with the coronavirus. I strongly urge people to do it and do whatever you want to do in it. Don't be afraid to change areas. And I think this is controversial, but I have advice for the women who have been nursing for a much, much longer time than I have.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, if you don't like an area, change. You will be a better nurse for it. You'll be a better colleague for it. But there are so many jaded nurses that hate either their jobs or the area that they work in. And they just admit that they think it's too late to change. They wouldn't know what to do in another area. If you can come straight from university with no nursing experience and figure it out, then you can go from 10 years of working in like rehab to go to an acute setting. You'll figure it out.
Yeah, that's good advice. Because I know as a student, I came across a lot of, we'll say, like, we'll use the word jaded nurses to be polite. And yeah, it would have been nice to kind of just maybe see it. That kind of could taint, for other students, that can really taint the rotation if you have that nurse that's kind of bringing the whole mood down, the whole unit down. So yes. Yeah, I mean, and make a switch. You might be super happy in that new switch and you might find it more fulfilling instead of just kind of going through the motion. So yeah, totally agree.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've had people say to me like, oh, you're not nursing full time, or you know, at this stage I plan on doing it forever, like keeping at least a foot in the door forever. But when I was starting other businesses, my parents were kind of like, what a shame, like what a waste. You spent 3 years at university and, now, like, you're not doing it full time. Like, it's not a waste at all. Like, how can an education possibly be wasteful? Like, I, no matter what, if I never nursed again now, I'd still be so glad that I did the degree. Like, it was a great experience. I learned a lot about the world, not just about the job.
Well, that kind of feeds into the fourth and final question of, if you woke up tomorrow and you were 10 years old and you had to do it all over again to get back to where you are today, would you do it all over again?
Oof. I feel like... there's like the ethically correct answer is yes. But I don't know. I feel like, so I've started reading, the book list for one of the local universities, commerce, courses, and just because I'm interested in it. And now I sort of think, well, it would be a lot more beneficial to my career if I didn't do nursing and I had done commerce instead. So maybe I wouldn't. Maybe if I could go back in time, I wouldn't. But I do enjoy nursing so much. It's such a difficult question. Because you don't know, like, if I had done a different course, I might not even be in the fitness industry. Like, you don't know how each of your experiences has led to the next.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. And I think if you hadn't done everything over, most importantly, you wouldn't have ended up on the podcast in the first place. You know, that's like, you got to do it again.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, no, that's right.
That's funny. No, that's cool though. I mean, absolutely. You know, you can, I often sit around and think like, oh, if I had taken this path, that path, but I think, kind of like similar for you, it's still a very interesting and fulfilling path. So it's, I'm definitely happy with it. And, yeah, it could be different. Who knows, but it's definitely an interesting and fulfilling path right now. So I'm good with that.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
And that's what I'm hearing from you. Exactly. Exactly. That's what I'm hearing from you. So that's cool. Well, let's see. What time is it over there?
It's 11 a.m., quarter past.
Okay. All right. It's 9 p.m. here, so that's sweet. I mean, it's crazy the difference. And, but, yeah, I mean, thank you so much for your time and just, you know, just your story. I really appreciate just kind of hearing your story along the way.
Thank you so much for having me.
But, you know, I would love to have you on again in the future and just maybe just pick your brain about fitness as well, because I think fitness is such an important part of, you know, the health, you know, just being healthy. So I'd love to get some more insight on that as well. Maybe in the future we'll have you on again.
I would love that. I would love that.
All right. Awesome. Well, I hope you have a great day for you, and yeah, just enjoy. And thank you so much again.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
All right, Paige. Have a great one.
See you. Bye.
That was Paige Mills, registered nurse. Thank you so much for tuning in, and to those in the game and those on their way up, keep grinding and don't let anyone take your dream away from you.